प्रवृत्तिंशनव्रतकार्याकार्ये भयाभये बंधम मोक्षम शयावेति बुद्धि सात्विकी. Understanding by which one knows what ought to be done and what not ought to be done, and what is feared and what is not feared, what's binding and what's liberating, that's knowledge, understands intelligence rather, in the mode of ignorance, mode of goodness. That understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion. Actually, there are three things mentioned here. Dharmam and adharmam. We should know what is dharma and what is not dharma. We should know what, therefore, what should be done and what should not be done. And we should have clear knowledge. Ayatavat, according to Baladevya Dabhushan. Ayatavat, what does it mean? Yatavat, to know something as it is. And ayatavat means you can't understand it as it is. He glosses this term as asamyak. It's not complete knowledge. So we have heard in English also, they say, a little learning is dangerous. If you have some knowledge, but only some knowledge, not full knowledge, it's dangerous. How would you like it if your airline pilot announced at the beginning of the flight, I know a little bit about flying. I haven't necessarily gone to flying school yet, but I know something. I know basically how you have. First, you have to go up, and then you come down. So, this is the idea. Now, passion. This verse is dealing with passionate intelligence. It can't understand things as they are. This is the essence of this verse. There's not really very much commentary here because it's very simple. Rajasic buddhi means you're confused. And how do we get confused? What is it that confuses us when you're passionate, when your intelligence is passionate? Think about what the nature of passion is. It's not hard to guess. Your desire. We want things more than we want to know things. We want things. Regardless of what our intelligence tells us, we want things anyway. That is our main problem. And we want them so bad that even when the intelligence is tapping us on the shoulder and saying, well, wait a minute, you know that it's not this way, it's supposed to be that way, then we still, no, I don't want to hear you. This is passionate intelligence. So the reason we have incomplete knowledge and the reason we get confused, because it's confusion is definitely implied here. What is the confusion? I don't know what is dharma, and I don't know what is adharma. It's not clear to me, because my buddhi is partial only. In the Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Uddhava something very similar. He says, he's talking about aparimaya jnana. It's not complete knowledge. This is a problem, he says. This is what binds us. And even though people have aparimaya jnana, incomplete realization, still they remain intransigent in their position. Stubta. We heard this the other night. What is the quality of stubta? Which mode does that belong to? Stubta means stubborn. What mode is that? Mode of ignorance. Because we're completely ignorant. Ignorance means ignoring something. Ignorance, Jayapataka Swami said. Ignorance means ignorance. When you ignore something. So, when we have incomplete knowledge, and when we ignore the fact that we have incomplete knowledge, and we also ignore that knowledge itself because we have some desire to do something else, that means we're in the modes of passion and ignorance. So, but even incomplete knowledge is a problem, because if we have a little bit of understanding only, then it can only get us a little bit of the result. So, the person whose intelligence is passionate is confused, and he's not sure about what is dharma and what's not dharma. Now, we're lucky because we have one very simple formula that is given to us in the Manusmriti that tells us what to do if we're not sure what is dharma and what is not dharma. Does anyone know what that is? No, it's not likely. because we don't study Manusmriti so much. He says, if you just follow that path that is recommended by the Mahajanas, and particularly with those who went before us, whatever they understood as dharma, whatever is time-honored tradition, if we just do that thing, whatever our forefathers have done, then we will not go astray. This is their simple formula. The problem is that when we have incomplete understanding of that tradition, then it again lands us in the same boat. But at least that's the principle, we can understand that much. So here, this is the idea. In passion, our intelligence is bewildered, and therefore we can't tell what's right, what's not right. We can't tell whether we should do it or whether we should not do it, etc. And ayatavat, it's incomplete. All right, I don't think there's much more to say about that. Except for one thing. We don't know what is, Baladipta Bhushan says, we don't know, he says, sadhum, asadhum, asadhum cha sadhum. We take the sadhu to be a rascal, and we take a rascal to be a sadhu. That's one way to put it. Or if you take sadhu as an adjective instead of a noun, then it means we don't know what's good and what's bad. Or we think what's good is bad, and we think what's bad is good. Actually, that's in the mode of ignorance. But passion is asamyaptva. We don't have complete knowledge. Ayatava. Okay, let's move on. Dharmam dharmamiti ya manyate tamasavrta sarvartan viparitanscha buddhisa partha tamasi. This is the mode of ignorance. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness and strives always in the wrong direction, O son of Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. Purport. Intelligence in the mode of ignorance is always working in the opposite of the way it should. It accepts religions which are not actually religion, and it rejects actual religion. What's an example of this? This is not fanaticism. It's not dogmatic discrimination. It's an objective fact. There are so-called religions in this world that do not believe in God. Most of the time, the definition of religion is belief in the Supreme Being. Buddhism, for example, does not believe in any Supreme Being. Therefore, it cannot be called a religion. But people consider Buddhism to be one of the major world religions, isn't it? It's actually not religious at all. It's atheistic system. They don't, not only atheistic, they not only don't believe in God, Buddhism doesn't even believe in the self. They don't, what do they call it? Anatman. This is their Anatmavad. They say there's no such thing as the soul. So what is it that reincarnates? Because Buddhism does believe in reincarnation. What reincarnates from life after life? Anybody know Buddhist philosophy? They say the mind reincarnates from life after life after life until it's dissolved. And ultimately it becomes nothing. Therefore we call this Shunyavad. Shunyavad. It's actually worse than Mayavad. Because at least Mayavad accepts spiritual reality and accepts a supreme spiritual reality, even if it erroneously identifies the self as that reality. Okay, so this is, and as I was saying a moment ago, this is actually the nature of tamasic intelligence. We take something which is true to be false. We take something that's false to be true. We take religion to be irreligion. We take irreligion to be religion. We take a sadhu to be a rascal, cheater, and we take a cheater to be a sadhu. In other words, he says, Baladipta Bhushan, commenting on this verse, he says, everything we do, we accept in the, we go in the opposite direction. Whatever it is, the person whose intelligence is tamasic thinks it's the opposite thing. So this is very dangerous. We're getting worse. It's like Krishna says elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, just as dust covers a mirror, or just as smoke covers fire, or just as the womb covers an embryo, So our own eternal consciousness is covered by one degree of covering over or another. Which one is sattva-guna of these three?
A mirror covered by dust.
And therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Cheto darpana marjanam. You can clean a mirror if it's only covered by dust. So that means at least you have to come to this platform of sattva-guna that we've been describing the previous nights in order to qualify as a scripturally correct human being, in addition to being a biologically correct human being, because humanity is actually defined by dharma. What do we hear from Hitopadesh? Dharmasya hina pashuti samana. We're equal to the animals when we don't have dharma. So dharma is, in general, you can say it means shreyas or sattva guna. We have to have that. That is the baseline requirement for Krishna consciousness. There is no such thing as Krishna consciousness without dharma. This is a very, very important point. And as Prabhupada, we read in his books, page after page after page, only human beings can become Krishna conscious, not animals, except in rare exceptions, because anything is possible for the Supreme Lord. But in terms of general rules, this is true. It's absolutely necessary to understand these things. That's why we're dilating on this topic of the modes of material nature. Because until we come to sattva-guna, it will be very difficult to penetrate the mysteries of Krishna consciousness. It will be very difficult to apply them in a consistent and mature manner, using our best intelligence. Now, speaking of using our intelligence, that's the topic of the next trio, the triti in the three modes of material nature. But first, let's finish this idea here. We consider, tamasic buddhi considers that irreligion is religion and religion is irreligion. It's striving always in the wrong direction, Baladeva Bhushan says. So, does anybody have any questions on any of this so far? We've been talking about buddhi. Let me read what Prabhupada says. Intelligence in the mode of ignorance is always working in the opposite of the way it should. Men in ignorance understand a great soul to be a common man and accept a common man as a great soul. How do you say great soul in Sanskrit? Have you heard this word before? Yes, we have. No further comment is necessary. Okay, they think truth to be untruth, and they accept untruth as truth. In all activities, they simply take the wrong path. Therefore, their intelligence is in the mode of darkness. The other night, I quoted T.S. Eliot. He wrote very nicely in one of his famous poems called The Four Quartet. He wrote, From wrong to wrong, the exasperated spirit proceeds until redeemed by some refining fire. He's describing the mode of ignorance. We just keep out of the frying pan and into the fire, they say. This is what a person in the mode of ignorance does. You cannot help such persons. You cannot help them. We always want to feel compassion for others, but you cannot help someone whose fate is otherwise. Someone who's too deeply sunk, his trajectory is preset by the conditioning of the modes that his karma has chosen for him. And so he can hardly be elevated. Of course, that's by ordinary means. When we consider Krishna consciousness, anybody who is willing to adopt the practices can be elevated. So it's very, very, not very powerful. Krishna consciousness is actually the most powerful thing. Okay, so that is, we're finishing this first topic here, buddhi, in the three modes of material nature. No questions about this so far? Okay, so we'll go on to triti. What does triti mean?
Determination.
Determination. Text number 33. Dhrityayaya dhariyate manah pranendriya kriyaha yoginabhya vicharaniya triti sa partha sattviki. O son of Pratha, that determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steadfastness by yoga practice, and which thus controls the activities of the mind life and senses is determination in the mode of goodness. Now, what in the world does all that mean? Let's discuss this. Determination, trityayaya dharyate manah pranindriya kriyaha. One's activities utilizing the senses. Prana. Prana is a difficult thing to translate. Prabhupada necessarily translates prana as life. We can say that. But actually, prana is what sustains life within the body. There are different pranas, or life airs, that circulate throughout the body. They all have slightly different functions. And the yogi is someone, or someone whose determination is in sattva-guna, consciously employs these things. There are three things mentioned here. What three things is this person engaging? We just mentioned them. I put up my fingers for each one. The mind, the prana, and the senses. Yes. So we can engage our senses for the most part. That much we're in touch with. Our minds, that's a little bit more difficult because it's more subtle. The prana is even more subtle than that. Actually, my doctor told me, when you die, there are some elements of prana that remain in your body even after you're considered to be clinically dead. Anyway, it's a subtle subject matter. But the point to be appreciated here is that the yogi is very conscious and he connects them all. Yoga. Yoga means what? We mentioned this the other night. To link or to connect. To union. To union with what or whom? With the Supreme. This is what Baladev Dadabhushan says here. He concentrates his mind, his pranas, and his senses only on the Paramatma. And he has no other subject of concentration. In other words, we're talking about Krishna consciousness. It's a fancy way of saying it. Just like in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he gives a whole list of all the ways that you can discipline yourself to follow yoga. Since we're talking about Abhyavicharini Yoga here, that's very helpful. But at the end of his list, does anybody know? I think it's Sutra number 47, maybe 49. Nobody here studies Patanjali's Yoga Sutras in their spare time. It's not light reading. And it's in Sanskrit anyways. He says, Ishvara Pranidhanadva. Or, if you want, you can just focus on Ishvara. This is what he says. So this is the whole idea. All these yogas, we have so many yoga processes, we have so many philosophical processes, Sankhya, we have six darshans. But actually, it's the easy thing is to just fix your senses and your mind, and eventually your pranas as well, on God. And how do we do that, especially in the age of Kali? Easy thing, anybody can do. We chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. But, do you fix your mind on the chanting? Do you fix your pranas in this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? Do you fix all your senses in the Hare Krishna Mantra? Oh, so we've got some work to do, see? It's not that easy. Yoga Vyavicharini, unwavering yoga, he says here. This is the challenge. And somebody who can do this has determination in the mode of sattva-guna. Not so easy thing to do. Okay, what else does he say here? Srila Prabhupada writes, yoga is a means to understand the Supreme Soul. Does that sound like a paraphrase of what we just heard from Baladev Dadabhushan? What is the Supreme Soul in Sanskrit? Param Atma. Yes, okay. One who is steadily fixed in the Supreme Soul with determination, steadily fixed in the Supreme Soul. Does that sound like another translation of something we've just described? Of Vyavicharini Yoga, exactly. Concentrating one's mind, life, and sensory activities on the Supreme engages in Krishna consciousness. That sort of determination is in the mode of goodness. The word Vyavicharaniya is very significant. For it indicates that persons who are engaged in Krishna consciousness are never deviated by any other activity. This is also paraphrasing Baladev Dadabhushan. I also mentioned he does not There's no other subject matter of his concentration. Yes, he doesn't have any other vishaya, he says. Nothing else. He fixes his mind or his pranas or his senses. Okay, so that is sattvic determination. Now, yathātu dharma kāma arthān trittya dhārya terjana prasangena phalākāṅkṣi triti sa pārtha rājasi. On the other hand, that determination by which one holds fast to fruitive results in religion, economic development, and sense gratification is of the nature of passion, O Arjuna. Purport, any person who is always desirous of fruitive activities in religious or economic activities, whose only desire is sense gratification, and whose mind, life, and senses are thus engaged, is in the mode of passion. So how are we engaging our mind, life, and senses? Are you conscious of it? Are we in control of it, even? You can't be controlling of anything unless you're conscious of it first. Tamal Krishna Goswami used to say this very, very cogently. He said, before you can become Krishna conscious, you first have to become conscious. So to be conscious is to be in which mode? We read this two or three nights ago. Does anybody remember? The nature of the mode of goodness is increased awareness. And I'd like to point out this word jnana, for convenience sake, we always translate jnana as knowledge. But in fact, jnana means awareness, to be aware, to be conscious. This is a very important point. That's why it looks to be, we're talking about these at least six or seven topics here in chapter 18 within the three modes. And two of them seem to be, you know, without this understanding, two of them seem to be pretty much the same thing. Jnana and buddhi, what's the difference? Ah, here's the difference. Your consciousness is one thing, your buddhi is another thing altogether. Just like in Sanskrit land, which is to say, shastra chakshusha, by a shastric analysis, there's a difference between the mind and the intelligence. Most people, at least in the English language, there's not really any distinction made. But it's a very, very important distinction. What is the distinction between the mind and the intelligence? Hari Vilas Prabhu knows. The mind is a toggle switch. It only does two things. What are they? Sankalpa, vikalpa. I want it, I don't want it. This is all the mind can do. Everything else is supplied, you know, exactly all the reasons to do it or not do it, all the plans how to do it or how not to do it, that all comes from where? Buddhi. So your awareness is your mental state, we can say, at least that's one aspect. And then your discrimination about how to do something is all supplied by the intelligence, so it's different. All right, anyway, I don't want to take too long with that. The point is here that this person holds with determination, trittya dhariyate, with his determination, he's going for what? Yeah, he's palakangshi, he's hankering after the results all the time. And he wants results in which the three categories? Karma, artha, kama. What happened to the fourth one? He's not concerned because he's passionate. Therefore, he stays in the material world, which is what Krishna said back in chapter 14. Those who die in the mode of passion, where do they go? They stay here. This is the passionate place, this middle world. Urvam gacchanti sattvastha, madhye tishtanti rajasaha, jaghani gunavrtastha. Those in the sattva are going to go up to the higher planets or maybe even out into the spiritual world. Those in the mode of passion, they remain here. Horizontal progress, I said the other day. And those who are in the mode of ignorance, they go down. They go to hell or they become animals or something, but it's not auspicious. So, these are Krishna's words. So he's not even interested in liberation, and in fact, he's only interested in religion because what happens when you engage in dharma? You get artha, you get facility, just like we read. So many stotras are there. They say that somebody who reads this stotra, you know, on a Sunday or on the full moon or on Ekadashi, this person, you know, he gets this and this and that. They're not exactly exaggerations, or we call this arthavad. They're not meant to just fool you into doing something that's not true. You actually do get those things. But somebody who's doing his, who's motivated to do his dharma only because of the artha, that's passionate. And why does he want artha? What is the point of artha? Can you eat money? No. Does it feel good when you touch it? No. Can you hear it like nice music? No. What is the use of money then? Kama. We all know money secures your desires. It fulfills your desires. So this is passion. Once again, in a word, we can understand passion. Passion means strong desire and necessarily fruitive activity, frenetic activity. This is all discussed in chapter 14. I won't reiterate. So, Bali Vidabhushan here adds, it is through bad association that one strives for only dharma, artha, and kama, and he really wants the results. He's palakangshi, and he uses his mind only for kama, which necessitates artha, which requires artha, which necessitates dharma. He uses his mind for this purpose. His whole prana is invested in this project of fulfilling desires, and his indriyas as well. Just like, if you want to be very, very successful in the material world, you have to invest yourself like this. You have to be completely in samadhi. Samadhi, what does samadhi mean? Everything fixed on one point. And when you're in the mode of passion, everything is fixed on your kama, what it is you want, what your goal is. And what does that do? It takes you to hell. If not hell, I mean, Srila Prabhupada is so great. One time in London, somebody asked a question, Srila Prabhupada, does Krishna ever speak Bhagavad Gita even on the hellish planets? And Prabhupada didn't stop even for a moment. He said, yes. He said, this London is like hell. We're speaking Bhagavad Gita here. So actually this world is hellish when we're absorbed in too much sense gratification, because the reactions come. Whether we go to hell or not, it doesn't really make a difference. You have to pay. If you try to take sense gratification, yo bhunte stena eva sa, Krishna told us in chapter 3. A person who lives a life that is not based on sacrifice or not based on prescribed duty, whose only purpose in life is to enjoy kama, that person suffers. We'll read about that. We're getting ahead of ourselves here, but the idea is that this is passion. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes, any person who is always desirous of fruitive results in religious or economic activities, whose only desire is sense gratification, and whose mind, life, and senses are thus engaged, is in the mode of passion. Text 35. Yaya swapnam bhayam shokam vishadam madameva cha navamunchiti durmedha dhriti sa partha tamasi. Very nice verse, this one. Very instructive. We see, I mentioned this a couple of times already, whenever Krishna talks about demoniac life, or whenever he talks about the mode of ignorance, in this passage that we've been reading for the last several days, he seems to emphasize, he gives more content in the mode of ignorance, as if we, you know, it's the more relevant thing that we have to hear about. So he's mentioning, what is it, six or seven things here, it looks like. Okay, so first of all, swapna. What does swapna mean? Dreaming, Prabhupada says. Our acharyas have given a slightly different interpretation. Bhagavad-gita says that swapna means nidra, sleep. So that's also applicable, because you generally don't dream unless you're asleep. Of course, there's daydreaming. All right, so bhaya means when you capitulate to fear, that when you fall, you know, when you become overwhelmed by fear, that's also tamasic. That's also tamasic. Intelligence, which is swayed by fear, is tamasic. Shokam means when you're overwhelmed by suffering. And this is an easy thing to be overwhelmed by, suffering. Suffering can be very intense. Even Chanakya Pandit said, even a wise man who is too much in bad association becomes overwhelmed by their suffering. Even a wise man, we have to be careful. Vishadam, what does Vishadam mean? That's the result of becoming overwhelmed by dukkha. You become depressed, we say in English. This is the common word, depression, Vishadam. Madhameva-cha, he's Baladi Vidabhushan has given a nice gloss for this as well. He says, Madha equals Vishaya Bhoga Jo Gaurava, that pride which arises when you're absorbed in sense gratification. When everything is going great, we become proud. This is the problem. And generally, we feel everything is going great when our senses are satisfied, because we're all on the Anamaya platform by default. If you do nothing to elevate yourself beyond it, you stay there your whole life. Annamaya, realization. What does that mean? You appreciate the gross things, gross sense gratification. And this is, of course, what we have in common with the animals. Ahara nidra bhaya maitanam cha. When these things are all nice for us, then we become very proud, and somebody comes and suggests that, sir, you're going to die one day, perhaps you should invest some of your attention in cultivating a higher consciousness. And I get out, I don't have time for this stuff. You see? Therefore, he says, this is the definition of madha. You're proud through too much sense gratification. Okay, so that determination which cannot go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, moroseness, and illusion. This is the other one. Such unintelligent determination, O son of Pritha, is in the mode of darkness. Now, Srila Prabhupada in his purport, he says something new, would seem to, as if to explain why he differs from Baladeva Dabhushan here. He says, it should not be concluded that a person in the mode of goodness does not dream. Here, dream means too much sleep. So it means both dreaming and sleep, it would seem to me, from what he's written here. Dreaming is always present, either in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. Dreaming is a natural occurrence. But those who cannot avoid oversleeping, who cannot avoid the pride of enjoying material objects, does that sound familiar? What are we, he glosses this as... Vishaya Bhoga Jo Garva. This is Baladeva Dabhushan. And who is always dreaming of lording it over the material world, and whose life, mind, and senses are thus engaged, is considered to have determination in the mode of ignorance. In other words, he doesn't really have determination. He doesn't really have much determination. Practically speaking, he doesn't. Okay, what else do we have to say about this? Any questions so far? This is the second. Yeah.
Are you saying that a person in the mode of ignorance is determined to be depressed and sad and lamenting? It speaks rather surprising because nobody determined to be like that, they end up being like that. It speaks like nobody seems to be determined to be, you know, depressed or sad. They end up being...
No, we all have... The way that Krishna is looking at here is that we all have some determination, but that determination is very much obstructed by these things. When we get sorrowful, when we get depressed, when we get, you know, overwhelmed by fear, etc., then our determination becomes very less. That's how I read it. Yeah. It's not that we're determined to be lazy, that we're determined to be depressed. I don't think so. Okay, we'll go on then to the next third. This concludes our discussion of triti, or determination, in the three modes. Then Krishna talks about three types of happiness, and he introduces these with one shloka. He says, Sukham tvidanim trividham shrinome bharadarshita abhyasad ramate yatra dukhantam chagnigachati. All best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys. and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. I don't know where it is, but unless it's a class, it's probably good to stop it. Okay, so Baladevida Bhushan says here about this verse that the first half of the verse is an introduction. The second half of the verse, beginning with Abhyasat, through practice, he actually begins discussing the happiness and the mode of goodness. So we have 1.5 verses here on happiness and the mode of goodness. So let's just go on to the next verse. Yattaragre vishamiva pariname amritopamam tatsukham sattvikam proktam atma buddhi prasadajam. Another very beautiful verse. What does it mean? That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one's self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So, Baladevida Bhushan says, in commenting on this verse and a half, he says that there are certain characteristics of happiness that is in the mode of sattva-guna. First of all, it's like poison in the beginning and it's like nectar in the end. What does that mean? Why is happiness sattvic sukha, like poison in the beginning and like nectar in the end? Why? What does it mean? Because in the beginning you have to discipline your senses. It doesn't come automatically. Unlike sense gratification. When you engage in sense gratification, the happiness is instant. That's why we call it preyas rather than shleyas. Just like when you're a little kid, ice cream. Ice cream is preyas, instant gratification. And there's no kid on the earth who doesn't like ice cream. But if they eat too much of it, then it turns into poison. You see? Or as Krishna said previously, dukkha shoga amayam pada. It leads to disease if you don't eat properly. That's another matter. We've already discussed that. But happiness in the mode of goodness is like poison in the beginning because, as Naveen Krishna Prabhu said, it involves tapas. And what does tapas mean? Tapas. Austerity. Literally, what does it mean?
Accepting some difficulties.
Think literally. Suryas tapati madhyat. To burn. Dahana. Tapa actually means to burn. When you engage in austerity, it burns. It's not nice. It's painful. This is the point. So therefore, it's like poison in the beginning. But this kind of burning is very productive because amritopamam, it becomes just like nectar in the end. And what is that nectar? You become freed from suffering. For good. Dukkantam. This is the point. This is why Baladev takes it that the last half of the last verse, Abhyasa Ramate Yatra Dukkantam Janigachati. This is what he's saying. It begins with tapasa. You have to discipline yourself, you have to give up certain things, you have to regulate your senses, you have to rise early, you have to associate with saintly persons, all the things that we do in Krishna consciousness. It's not easy in the beginning. It can be very intimidating, even. But if we take the trouble and if we have sattvic determination and we apply our mind and our pranas and our senses, then we gradually realize amrita, amrita. And that amrita is liberation. Samadhi, he says. It's very good. So, abhyasa dranate yatra. It's by practice this thing comes. It doesn't happen automatically. Ice cream, you're pleased automatically and instantly. It's not that you have to eat ice cream again and again and again before you begin to taste its nice effects, right? Every child knows this. But Krishna consciousness is like that. You have to keep taking it. Rupa Goswami gives this very nice analogy. Just like when you have jaundice. Anybody here ever had jaundice? Jaundice, that's some kind of hepatitis, low level. My wife had jaundice. They turn yellow when you have jaundice. And Rupa Goswami says, When you have jaundice, what is the last thing that you want to eat? Ice cream! Because if you eat ice cream when you've got jaundice, what does it taste like? Canela! You might even say, if you can imagine, Canela pickle. Something really, really intense. You see? So we all have jaundice. That's why we take birth here. We've got the jaundice of what? Avidya. Avidya. Nonetheless, when we take sweet things when we have jaundice, anybody who's done this knows, hote hote it becomes sweet, and you eventually become cured. This is how it works. So, abhyasa dramate and dukhantam cha nagacchati. You get the end of all suffering by undergoing this austerity. That is the nature of sattvic happiness. Okay. Now, Srila Prabhupada says, in the course of our material lives, we become relieved from material entanglement by association with a great soul, sadhu sangha. In other words, a conditioned soul is always engaged in some type of sense gratification, but when he understands by good association that it is only a repetition of the same thing, he is awakened to his real Krishna consciousness, and he is sometimes relieved from such repetitive so-called happiness. Now, we can take note here that, according to Prabhupada's purport, how do we come about associating with or attaining sattvic sukha, real happiness that is like nectar and which lasts forever and ends all misery? By good association. In exactly the same way, if those of you listening carefully, you may have noted, how do we come into this rajasic attachment? Through bad association. Baladeva Devashim mentioned that. That's something to take note of. Text 37, and then we're almost done. Yattaragre vishamiva paraname amanatopamam tatsukam sattvikam. Okay, we've read this already, sorry. So text 38. Vishayendriya sanyogat yattaragre maratopamam paraname vishamiva tatsukam rajasam smritam. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end is said to be of the nature of, you can guess, passion. Yes. What do we have a nice word for these things in English? Pernicious. Pernicious. The word pernicious means it's very attractive and it looks very good also. They have a saying in English, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. In other words, it's not true. So this is, passionate happiness is pernicious. A young man and a young woman meet, and the senses drive the young man to see her, to touch her, and to have sexual intercourse. In the beginning, this may be very pleasing to the senses, but at the end, or after some time, it becomes just like poison. Shall I dilate on the details? We all know. Crimes of passion, that's just one result. Divorce, that's another result, right? Infidelity, that's a third result. So many things. Okay. Then they're separated, or there is divorce, there is lamentation, there is sorrow, etc. Such happiness is always in the mode of passion. Happiness derived from a combination of the senses and the sense objects is always a cause of distress and should be avoided by all means. That's a very strong statement. So Baladeva Devashim mentions here also about rajasic happiness, particularly this nectar. What is the nectar that we're talking about which turns into poison? Sense gratification in general, but particularly sensual enjoyment, passion, especially male-female enjoyment. Nowadays they're so passionate that it doesn't even have to be the opposite sex anymore. Okay, so, and what is that poison? The dukkha, or niraya, he says. What does niraya mean? You have to go to hell. You pay for it one way or the other. That's called the play now, pay later plan. That is happiness in the mode of passion. It always leads to distress. This is the formula, if you want to remember a pithy little formula. The natural result of Passionate happiness is suffering. Period. Always. This is an axiom. Okay. Text 39. Yaragre chano bandhecha sukham mohanam atmanah nidralasya pramarottham tat tamasam udahritam. That happiness which is blind to self-realization and which is delusion from beginning to end and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion is said to be of the nature of ignorance. Purport. One who takes pleasure in laziness and in sleep is certainly in the mode of darkness, ignorance. And one who has no idea how to act and how not to act is also in the mode of ignorance. We've already read this, haven't we? For the person in the mode of ignorance, everything is illusion. There is no happiness either in the beginning or at the end. In other words, he's fully bewildered every step of the way, as we already read. He's constantly striving in the wrong direction. That's the worker in the mode of passion, or the determination in the mode of passion. So, it goes from illusion to illusion. It bewilders the Atma, it arises from sleep, laziness, and neglect of what is to be done and what is not to be done. That's Baladevita Bhushan's definition of pramada. The word pramada here is mentioned. So what does pramada mean? He doesn't distinguish between what should be done and what should not be done. Why does he not distinguish? Because he's neglectful. He may know, but he's neglectful. You see? And then what else does he say? Alasya. Alasya means you're perfectly capable of working, but you make no endeavor. That is laziness. Okay. There's a story about this. Anyway, enough to said here. For the person who is in the mode of passion, there might be some kind of ephemeral happiness in the beginning and at the end distress, but for the person in the mode of ignorance, there's only distress, both in the beginning and at the end. Just like Punjabis, any Punjabi knows. Nowadays in Punjab, it must be half of the population below the age of 30 is addicted to drugs. That is misery in the beginning and misery later on, both. Because immediately it ruins your life, and in the long run, you're dead. You see? That is tamasic happiness. So, all right. I'm going to stop here. There's more that can be said, but it's late already, so. And we're going to resume Ajamila Prabhu's Adhuta Sankirtana. So, does anybody have any questions or any comments on any of this?